Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T and myself, Wole. We're your hosts. The homie Ray Jeezy is out, and we are part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. What's good, bro?
I'm good, man. Show number 522. Football season starts, so now this show is the Will T and the Urban Sports Scene podcast, because we all know last year I carried this podcast to success in our Pick'em League.
Yeah, I don't even know we're doing that this year, bro.
I don't know either.
I didn't get an email. I didn't get a text or a Facebook, a Twitter DM about it, so... I don't know how we're doing it, man.
I mean, you know, hopefully, you know, Hakeem Wong finds it in himself to allow me to, you know, to defend my title.
Well, but maybe we'll just do a fantasy football thing. Maybe that will be the new urban sports thing, football garbage time comp.
I don't know, man. You know, whatever it is, you know, looking forward to it, man. Yeah. It's always a spirit of competition. So, yeah,
man, you know
it's
what I'm saying? Good. Both teams play hard. Rasheed Wallace, North Carolina, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And don't forget to subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel.
All right. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the podcast app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene. Bloggers, sportscasters, and sports debates.
All right, man. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Washington Commanders season opener against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We will have Sports Journeys Commanders reporter Lake Lewis Jr. on the show. He is also one of the main personalities on ABC Morning News for WOAY-TV. At 8:25, we'll talk Maryland Terps football with Testigo Times Emmett Siegel. He will join us to discuss this. Excuse me. At 8:40, we'll talk about world heavyweight champion Tyson Fury challenging Anthony Joshua. And finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with UMES Hawk Pride women's basketball coach. Don't do that. Make that face, Coach Fred Batchelor. But first, right now, we have Sports Journeys Washington Commanders reporter Lake Lewis on the line. What's good, Lake?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Just getting ready for Sunday.
I'm about Lake, I need to see your energy up, man. Yeah, it's Sunday. Man. It's happening, bro. You know.
It's happening. It's happening.
You know. I don't get too high, too low. I just got to get there.
My man, Lake Mello. Like, he real mellow.
Lake, what time do you need me at the stadium for my live shot?
I know that's right. Oh, man. Hey, Lake, I mean, obviously, it's going to be a for fans, I'm hoping to see. So hopefully fans do show out. But if they don't, it is what it is. It is what it is. But, like, you'll be in the building, like we just mentioned. This fan base has downplayed the Jaguars for real. Do you think that they should chill on this? Like, the Jaguars has talent enough to beat this squad?
Of course they do. I mean, they're both in the same boat, both teams. I mean, I don't know why everybody feels so – you know, positive that Washington is definitely winning this game, because it's not going to be an easy football game to win. Jacksonville, you know, even though they didn't have a great record last year, they had a lot of turmoil with their former coach, Urban Meyer. Trevor Lawrence was a rookie at quarterback. I mean, Travis Etienne. I mean, they had a lot of young players, and, you know, just the ship wasn't going in the right direction. Obviously, they fired Urban Meyer, but they do have some talent, and they were a major player in free agency in the offseason. So I think their team on paper looks better, just like Washington. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's two teams that are really trying to get out the gate quickly to show people that they're trying to turn the corner and produce a better product on the field. So I think it's going to be a really close football game. I do have Washington winning. I'm sure you're going to mention that later. I have Washington winning, but I have them winning like 20-17. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means.
So, like, how much pressure you think is on Carson Wentz to have a good performance, knowing that, this is his first start, his first game as the Washington Commanders starting quarterback in the regular season. B, he's going against a team that knocked him out of the postseason. And C, his former coaches on that same team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those are great points, that you bring up. Doug Peterson, first year with Jacksonville as their coach. Obviously, he won a Super Bowl in Philadelphia, and his quarterback who started that year was Carson Wentz. So, yeah, Carson Wentz wants to prove to his coach, because let's face it, I think Doug Peterson is out of Philadelphia because of the way he handled Carson Wentz, So I'm sure Carson Wentz wants nothing more. If you're a competitor, like we all are, you want nothing more to give it to the person that may not have seen the best in you. So there's a lot of pressure there for him to produce. And then on top of that, you don't want to start your new lifeline, so to speak, out on a negative note, and you lose your first game in Washington, a winnable home game. And if he does play poorly, that means Trevor Lawrence is probably playing well. So you don't want to be outplayed by your contemporary as well. So, there's pressure on him. Make no mistake about it, to get out the gate early and have some success, because they need that from a morale standpoint in the locker room.
So, like, for you, what do you want to see from this team against the Jaguars?
What I wanted to see, unfortunately, is not going to happen. Obviously, Brian Robinson is not going to be playing. I was really looking forward to seeing how he changed the dynamic of the offense, because I thought, and I still think he will when he comes back. I just think that his style of running, and he's a true running back, a guy with vision, knows how to hit the holes. He was more seasoned, obviously, as a rookie. He was more seasoned than Antonio Gibson, who I don't think is a true running back. So with all that said, now Antonio Gibson gets his shot again, and he has to make the most out of it. He's got to run violent, got to run angry. And, so I'm looking to see what does Washington's running attack look like, because you don't want to put all the pressure on Carson Wentz to have to beat teams with his arm. If he throws the ball 40 times in this game, then Washington's losing the football game. There's no doubt about it. So they have to have some kind of balance. And for me, I'm looking to see what the running attack can produce without Brian Robinson.
So real quick, so I'm going to read. I do want to read the tweet. We talked about Jacksonville being a team that all the fan base seems to be like an easy squad. The homie Cameron on Twitter tweeted, "Jets fans are overly confident about this game because it's the Jaguars. They've been the worst team the last 2 years. You never know what to expect when it comes to the first week of the season." And also, to Lake's point, the Jaguars are better in terms of the draft and coaching. And also, this is Lawrence's second year. And if his talent. Lawrence is still a talented quarterback. Will?
All right, you are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Right now, we are chatting with Sports Journeys Commanders reporter Lake Lewis Jr. All right, Lake, some positive news about the coaching staff. Over the weekend, it was announced that Ryan Kerrigan would be the team's assistant defensive line coach. Do you think he'll have a positive impact on this defensive line going in for this season, and particularly during this game?
I do. I mean, I think that, he's a respected guy. Everybody likes Ryan, and he's had success, obviously, in the league. So and more importantly, the majority of these guys that he's coaching now, he played with. So there's definitely a familiarity with what they're trying to accomplish schematic wise. And, let's call it like it is. There's no more Sam Mills Jr. there. And, so it's a different type of coaching style. Ryan's probably going to be more of a complimentary coach. you know, that when you do something wrong, he'll explain to you what you're doing wrong and how you can do better, but not, you know, not take you to task, you know, and let's just call it like it is. These youngins are sensitive nowadays, so you can't really, you know, you can't really come at people like that now. It's just a different age we live in. So tough love doesn't necessarily work anymore. Guys just need love. And I think that, you know, his style would be really good for these young guys.
All right, Lake, you gave us your prediction, but I have one more question. I have a question for you. All right. So USA Today rated FedEx Field the number 32 stadium in the NFL, right? So absolutely worst stadium from a fan experience perspective. As you go into this opening week, home opener, what should, if you have any clue, like what can fans expect from a fan experience going into FedEx Field this year? If you know the answer to that.
I mean, they're going to always change some things, you know, to tell the fans they're going to have a new experience. But the number one experience for fans is, did they go to a game where a team won? That's what it matters to. You could have all the pageantry and all, you know, the other stuff that at a stadium. And if the team's losing, it doesn't matter what you're rolling out there. On the flip side, if your team's winning, you could care less what the pageantry looks like because you just want the W. So, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some new things in there. Obviously, you got the new fight song and they're going to probably have a mascot and, you know, that supposed dance team does their stuff, which I don't like. I have no problem saying that. But you know, I just don't like that. That's just too much. But, you know, again, we're there to cover a team to try to get a W. And at the end of the day, I think that's what Washington fans are all about. And I think sometimes the fan base, you know, feels, what's the word I want to say, duped, so to speak. You know, they feel like they're being deprived of the tradition that once was. And it's not so much the tradition that was called the Redskins. It's the tradition of what was produced as the Redskins. And it was winning some football games, having relevant football in December, you know. And they just haven't had it in so long that, someone's going to throw out, well, we just had it 2 years ago when Ron Rivera was in his first year. They were 7-9 and made the playoffs. That's not normal. So, you know, 2 7-win seasons. They need to produce and win more games this year if they're going to make the playoffs. So that's what the fan experience should be about, watching a product on the field that's improving weekly and getting better. And I do believe this team has enough talent to win more games than they've won in the past 2 years. They've just got to put it all together, and they've got to have the coaching that gets them there too.
You mentioned coaching. So how much pressure is on Coach Rivera to start the gate fast?
I mean, it's there. I mean, you can try to sugarcoat it and try to, you know, come up with all the variables that'll give him more time. Like you can say, you know, unfortunately, look at what happened to Brian Robinson. You know, unfortunately, you know, Carson Wentz hasn't taken a snap as a starter yet for this team in a regular season game. So, you know, there's all these things that you can keep saying, but believe me, those walls are closing in slowly now. You know, it's not the honeymoon that it was before. Now you full-fledged married and the arguing and all that stuff's there. Now what you gonna do? So, you know, they gotta produce. And I think the fan base is literally at that tipping point right now where they're not gonna accept, you know, another 7-win season and be told that there's still progress being made.
All right, so give us your prediction. Also, give us who is the difference maker for this game.
I'm going to take Washington 20-17 in this game. And for me, the difference maker in this football game, ironically, is going to come down to special teams. It's going to come down to which field goal kicker.
Oh, Lane.
You know. Yeah, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. I think this team is that close. I do.
No, I mean the kicker. The kickers are bad. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Who's going to make the kick when they need to make it?
Okay, all right.
That's what it's going to come down to. And I do. I think Washington wins this game, and I think this game is tied or close the whole way through, and they pull it out in the end in the fourth quarter. And they start their season off on a positive note with a win, but there still would be more question marks to come out of this win.
Yeah, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Do you think that satisfies the fan base if the game is tight the whole way, knowing how they feel about Jacksonville?
Well, no, it's going to be tight the whole way. Okay. I really believe that. Okay. I just don't see Washington blowing Jacksonville out. I really don't. I don't think it's going to be that type of football game. Now, if they can do that, more power to them. That makes everything better for everybody.
Yeah.
Makes the food and beer, all that stuff at the stadium taste better. Makes the food in the press box taste better. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I really don't. I just think, you know, the first game of the season for a lot of teams is, you know, let's face it, Washington hasn't had their product on the field in games for a long time, like cohesively, which is something that I'm totally against. I understand, you know, some coaches' philosophy is to get their guys healthy to week one. And I understand that mentality. But I'm also along the lines of, if you're not that good, you need guys to get as many reps as they possibly can under a normal circumstance. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen guys, starters play first quarter, halves, things of that nature throughout the preseason just to get, you know, together. But, you know, they wanted to save a guy like Curtis Samuel, make sure he made it to the regular season healthy. But is there a magic switch for this team that everybody lines up healthy on Sunday and it all clicks? Because, you know, when you're playing against your same starting defense, they know what you're doing. You know what you're trying to do. Uh-huh. I mean, you're not really getting the same amount of work.
Yeah.
So now it's just a matter of executing the plays. And for me, that first game when you haven't played a lot is a little raggedy, you know. Uh-huh. So it starts to click maybe in the second half. And that's why I say I don't think anybody's running away from this football game.
Gotcha.
You know, as far as an individual player, I'm looking to see the impact Jahan Dotson has on the offense.
I knew he was going to say that.
Yeah, and it's not because, you know, it's not because we are, of course, you know. But it's just, I just want to see, because naturally Jacksonville's thinking they're going to line up guys and, you know, play high, play low over Terry McLaurin. Well, you can't really do that. And if you have Curtis Samuel out there as well. There's just a lot of intricacies to this offense that could be dynamic if it were to work.
Yeah.
You know, even with Antonio Gibson now, you know, having that role back, I think they're going to move him around a lot, too, out the backfield. So you've got talent all over the place. You got pretty much your tight end room coming back pretty much for the first game. And if Logan Thomas does decide to play the first game, it just opens things up that much more. I don't see him playing week one. That's just my own personal opinion.
Me either.
You know, I just see it being more safe to get him back in for Detroit next week. And it's okay because, you know, if you have Cole Turner playing, John Bates playing, you know, you have some of your weapons back, and it's enough, you know, to give him another week to make sure, you know, his knee and everything's stable underneath him. So, yeah, man, you know, looking to see what Jahan does. But I am taking Washington 20-17.
Well, hopefully Washington shows out, starts the season 1-0, gives the fan base some hope. You know what I mean? So we'll see how that plan pans out. But Lake, thanks for being on, my man. Let our listeners know what you got going on, and also how they can catch you on social media.
Appreciate that. You know, just trudging along, man, with my ABC gig and you know, morning show, doing that. I am firing up my podcast at the end of the week, getting that back in the fold, which will be all things Washington, you know, so that'll be nice. And, I'm still covering the team. I haven't disappeared. I'm you know, getting ready to work some stuff in there. Got two articles popping up tomorrow on sportsjourney.com about the game. And I definitely will be back this weekend, and look forward to catching up with some of you guys and some of the fans out there. So you follow me on social media. Lake Lewis on Twitter, Lake Lewis Jr. on Instagram, Facebook, all the others. And obviously, you can check out our sportsjourney.com on social media as well. So, you know, just keeping it going.
Awesome. All right, Lake. Well, if you're going to catch up with Wole, it won't be in the press box because he won't be there this season. So, you know, if you got to catch up with him, just call him early before, you know, you got to do the first live shot, man.
Hey, Lake, like I told you, just meet me at Jasper's, dude. I'll be in the streets. All
right. We might have to do that. We might have to get in the streets.
All right. Let's put it that way. Will, try to call me out, put me on blast. I'll be in the streets, though, Will. You know what I'm saying? You know what? Like Jay said, God did. I'm in there.
Absolutely.
All right, Lake, man. We appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you, brother.
All right, take care, fellas.
All right, take care, man. Bye.
All right.
All right, again, his Twitter handle is at Lake Lewis. So check out Lake. All right. The Terps start the season 1-0 with a victory over Buffalo. Like, that's a good one. That's a good victory, right? Buffalo has had some dudes in the past, right? Hey, Testudo.
It's made at best.
Testudo Times deputy editor Emmett Siegel will join us to discuss the Terps' dominant victory after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Zone.
For ages.
Hey, Eddie.
Deuces on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
.com.
Salema, itayala mi, bilondoloze, uambena mi, zungangishilana. Salema, itayala mi, bilondoloze, uambena mi, zungangishilana. Oh, you are born I'm not perfect, I came from ruthless times as a juvenile. Ilondoloze, soon gangishilana. Look into my eyes, see pain and sacrifice. What's goes on my mind, trying to survive. Ilondoloze, soon gangishilana. Toma kae mo wuru, oti wuru si wuru, emi wan wa mi ni buru, toju ku uju uru, mi ani teji suri, time si mi suri, lati kara si buru, na tu ikoro du.
I call Anna, move so ami, I'll call Anna. Ilondoloze, Zuhambenami, Dawoyami, I call Anna, move so ami, I'll call Anna. Ilondoloze, Zuhambenami.
Ilondoloze,
You are listening to the Urban Sports Thing with myself, Wole, and Will T. The homie Ray Jeezy is out, and we are part of Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com. All right, right now we have Testudo Times Deputy Editor Emmett Siegel on the line. What's going on, Emmett? And welcome to the Urban Sports Thing.
Well, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you on, my man.
Absolutely, man. Well, welcome. You know, I know we don't know each other. Will, I'm the other third of the Urban Sports Scene. All right. The Terps beat the Buffalo Bulls 31-10. What were your thoughts on the game?
Well, it was mostly what we expected. I mean, they're much better than Buffalo, at least talent-wise. So you definitely expect them to start 1-0, and they should hopefully start 2-0 this week. But yeah, I mean, you know, we saw, I think, what we mostly needed to see out of them. It's early in the season, so everything's not going to look perfect. But yeah, I mean, it's always good to start with a win and get the season off on the right foot.
Who were you impressed with the most in that game?
I think it was definitely got to be freshman running back Roman Hemby. It was his first game as the starter in his short career. He only played a couple games last year, and he broke off two long touchdown runs. One was 70 yards. He had close to 120 yards rushing, and he had two touchdowns on the game. So I think he was definitely the standout from the game and the one that definitely grabbed the headlines, and rightfully so.
So who would like to, by watching this game and seeing how they play, do you feel like they are ready for Big Ten play, to be competitive for Big Ten play?
I mean, I think if the Big Ten season were to start tomorrow, I wouldn't feel very confident, but okay. They still have 3 weeks until their first Big Ten game, which is at Michigan.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's obviously a couple weeks away. I think they're in a decent position. You know, they say that most progress comes from week 1 to 2, so hopefully they look pretty sharp this Saturday against Charlotte, and yeah, we'll take it from there.
How do you feel about quarterback play?
It was all right. I mean, Talia Tungavailoa is one of the more talented quarterbacks Maryland's had in a while. You know, he missed a couple throws. He threw an interception that was probably not a great read. But overall, I mean, he was all right. You know, early season, you can kind of chalk up a lot of the mistakes to Russ, so I wouldn't worry too much about it. But he's got so many weapons. The receivers are so talented on this team that, you know, I wouldn't worry about the passing attack.
So what would you, so if you had to grade their performance, for you, if you had to grade their performance, what would you grade the offense and defensive side of football?
I would say the defense definitely was the star of the show. I think I would give the defense probably an A-. You know, they're playing a team that has a lot of question marks. I mean, Buffalo had pretty much their entire offensive line leave before the season. They're starting a new quarterback, so you know, you would like to see Maryland perform well on defense, and they did. They only allowed 10 points, one of which was in the fourth quarter, a touchdown. The offense, I'd give them like a B. They were okay. I mean, the running game was great. The passing attack is supposed to be the kind of cornerstone of the offense. So, you know, they were all right. But as I said, you know, it's early in the season, so you kind of, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, and you don't really know what the team is going to look like as a finished product later on.
So would you say in this this season for Mike Locksley, this is the season, like, he needs to really turn around? The team was 7-6 last season, but still, this is the season that Maryland fans want to see the turnaround of this ball club.
I mean, I think you've got to say that considering just the talent on this team, it's much more than they've had, I would say, in at least a decade, probably longer. Probably since Ralph Friesen was a coach, really. I mean, you have three guys on the roster right now that are kind of floating around mock drafts as first-round picks. So, I mean, the schedule is incredibly difficult. They play in the Big Ten. They play in the Big Ten East. They're not going to be able to compete with the talent of, like, Ohio State, say, but, I mean, I think they should be able to improve on their win total of last year, hopefully make a bowl game, win another bowl game, and continue building in the right direction, which I think Locksley definitely has the program moving in the right direction.
All right, Emmett, you touched on something I wanted to kind of expound on with regards to talent. Mike Locklear, he start, you know, 1-0 to start his fourth season. We've seen a Mike Locklear has really made his name within college football as a star recruiter, right? He's gotten a lot of 4- and 5-star players, particularly when he was at Alabama. When we look at the composition of this Maryland roster, why is it that there's still so many elite players that are leaving the area to go to other college football programs?
I mean, I think a lot of it is just the reputation of Maryland compared to some of these other programs. I mean, if I'm, you know, a high school senior and I'm looking at, you know, my offers are Maryland and then Ohio State and Georgia, you know, it's Maryland can sell the fact that you stay local, and Mike Locklear is a great coach and a great guy to play for. And I think that, you know, guys like Stephon Diggs, I know a lot of players have mentioned how influential he was in proving that, you know, going to Maryland can get you to the NFL and make you be successful. But I think it's just hard to sell kids on the fact that Maryland can be a real contender just because, you know, you look at just prestige and everything like that, and playing in the college football playoff and playing for conference championships. That's something that Maryland's working towards, but it's not necessarily somewhere that they are yet. They've made a great investment in the facilities. I don't know if you guys have seen the new football facility. It's beautiful. It's just really as nice as anywhere in the country. But, you know, Maryland is still basketball first in its athletic department in the way that, you know, the fans really approach it. So it's a hard job, but I think that the fact that Locklear has had so much success recruiting is just really kind of speaks to his ability to do so and just the kind of person he is.
Do you personally want Maryland to go back to the ACC? Because I feel like that's what I want.
I mean, I think that, you know, Maryland being in the ACC obviously makes a lot more sense, you know, like geographically and in terms of the rivals. I mean, there's not really any natural rivals in the Big Ten. I know, you know, Penn State's like kind of a rivalry, but they also kind of beat Maryland almost every time they play. So, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, being in the ACC would be great, but also just with, you know, conference realignment and all that stuff, you kind of have to be in the Big Ten or SEC in order to compete financially. So I think that in the long run, going to the Big Ten is the right move. But yeah, it obviously, you know, sucks to lose your natural rivals.
I know, I feel that. Hey, Emmett, this has been dope. Before we let you go, how can our listeners catch your content and catch you on social media as well?
So you can, you know, read all of our content at testudotimes.com. We cover all Maryland sports, but, you know, obviously an emphasis on football and basketball. And then you can catch me personally. I'm on Twitter at Emmett Siegel and then an underscore after my name. You know, the season's just getting started up, so there's a lot more to come. And we're super excited to keep it rolling.
Oh, definitely. Emmett, we hope to have you on again this season.
Of course, anytime.
All right, sounds good. All right, thank you so much for being on, my man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you, Emmett.
Again, that's awesome. Again, follow Emmett on Twitter at Emmett Siegel underscore. Again, at Emmett Siegel underscore.
All right, when we come back from commercial break, is Ferry versus Joshua still the fight to make? We will discuss that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene. You dig?
Doses.
On Ampire Media. That's ampiremedia.com.
And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More so than before, but tonight.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my peers. Putting suckers in fear. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Explosion. Wrecking shop when I drop these lyrics that'll make you call the cops. Don't you
just getting warm, just like Muhammad Ali. They called them Cassius.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. What time is it? Am I, we that early?
Yeah, we're that early, man.
Gee, I ain't paying no mind. We all that early.
I mean, it's okay, man. It doesn't always have to be.
You
know,
you're right, bro. You're right. It doesn't have to. Anyway, yeah, it's dope. We're doing it. We're running this game like a beast. All right. Where we at? So, Tyson. Okay, so I got it. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene with Wole and Will T.
Why is it Wole with – why isn't it Will T featuring the Urban Sports Scene? I told you it's football season. I'm the guy who really – elevated our show last year to make us reputable when it comes to NFL picks. So I think since during the NFL season, it should be Will featuring the Urban Sports Scene.
What's happening here?
I'm just giving an opinion,
like,
man.
What is happening here, bro? Like,
I appreciate you and Ray. You guys are the out front, the faces. You know, you touch the people, you communicate with the people on Twitter and Facebook. you know, Ray's a star because he's having articles posted on SI.com with related to HBCU. Matter of fact, while I'm talking about it, I want everybody to go out there and check out Ray's article.
Thank you, bro. Yeah.
Which is entitled The HBCU Vibe on Full Display at 2022 Aggie Eagle Classic on SI.com. Yeah. Matter of fact, I'll get Wole to tweet that out, if you don't mind. Yeah, because I'm not on Twitter or social media or anything.
Now I got to go check my phone and pull up the article.
I'll send it to you. I'm sending it to you right now, my brother.
Then I'll tweet it out. That's cool. I can do that. See, I can do that.
Yeah, so since Ray couldn't be here, man, to plug his...
I think I made an error on the outline. She ain't been that early, for real. It's not early.
It's all good, man. Look, we just talking, shooting a breeze, brother.
I just made an error on the outline. She ain't been... It's not even early, for real. But, yeah, bro,
So, yeah, over the weekend, Tyson Fury offered Anthony Joshua a chance to fight for Fury's WBC heavyweight championship, even after Joshua lost convincingly two times in a row.
See, you say convincingly. You see, yeah. You got hype when you say that, John.
I mean, am I lying when I say this?
I mean, he got beat.
He got beat? Oh, he's Nigerian. You don't want to talk about it.
He got beat. You know what I'm saying? He got beat.
Like I said, 419. It was exposed in the ring.
419, man. Hey, look. The English side got beat. His Nigerian side was still... He was trying to show some heart. But
his Nigerian side is what broke down and had that breakdown after the loss.
Because we don't like to lose. Because that English side liked to lose. The English side picked the flags and been all cool. The Nigerian side was like, nah, what is this? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a fighter. I fight. I box. Yeah, that's the Nigerian side.
I hear you, my brother.
That's pride.
All right, but
Niger pride.
Speaking of a potential Fury versus Joshua fight, is this still the fight to make?
I mean, is it really the fight to make? Not the fight.
Is it a fight to make that you think people will pay attention to and purchase?
People will watch. It's because You're talking about the U.S.? That's another question. In the U.S.?
Well, I mean, over in the pot. I'm just talking about people
in boxing
general.
In general. Yes. Yeah, I think people will watch. I mean, people will want to see it.
You really think so?
Yeah, I think people want to see it. It's still the fight. If you look at, you know, if you go on social media and see it, what people want, they would still take the fight. It just wouldn't be – I just think for two of the individuals, it's a fight that doesn't need to be made. If you want to know about true boxing, because it's just not – it's not a fair thing to me. Like, you just lost two times to dude. Like, how do you get the chance of the world titles, the world championship? It's just, to me, common sense speaking. You know, I think that the natural course of it should be Anthony Joshua should take on Tyson Fury. I mean, not Tyson Fury. Anthony Joshua should take on Deontay Wilder. And Fury should take on Usyk. That's it. Like, and then whoever wins, like, and that if they win on this camp, then they could be, not Deontay, because Deontay already fought him already. Depending on who the winner is, right? So say Usyk wins, right? And Deontay beats Joshua. Then I want to see Deontay fight Usyk, right? Because it's brand new. I don't need to see Fury Wilder again, right? Just like you don't want to see Usyk and Joshua again, right? It is what it is. Now, if Joshua beats Deontay, then I'm okay with him getting that shot at Fury. But if in terms of like we're talking about a draw, I think he's still a draw. He's a big draw in London. You have Fury, who's a big draw over that side of the pond too. So it's still going to be a big fight. Like, they can pack Wembley Stadium off those two alone. Like, they really could. So it's a fight to make. Now, I don't get why Fury is challenging Joshua. It could be because he feels like he's damaged goods. I don't know. I don't feel like it's the time to challenge him. Or maybe he wants to do him a favor. Like, he's heard about the mental health, and maybe feels like, you know what, this can help, you know, help Anthony Joshua get his confidence back.
It's all a ploy, man. Mm-hmm. It's all a negotiation ploy, right? Mm-hmm. We've heard, or not heard, but we've seen mm-hmm. Tyson Fury throw out a relatively large number with regards to a Usyk fight, and that number is $500 million, mm-hmm. right? He's tweeted out that he wants $500 million to fight Usyk, mm-hmm. and then Deontay Wilder, who Tyson Fury beat also twice, convincingly,
right.
Last two fights, said, "Hey, if Tyson Fury prices himself out, I'm here for it." And then he replied to that tweet with saying, if you know what you're worth, you need to go for it. So I think that having that kind of having that information as a backdrop, and then him proposing this fight against Anthony Joshua, is all a negotiation ploy. You know, we know that most people know that Tyson Fury is a guy who's worth a lot, just simply off of his standing within boxing as the lineal champion. His past two performances against Deontay Wilder, but you know, and his alleged retirement. So I think you take all of those things that it's alleged.
What's up with that? Like this?
Once again, it's a negotiation ploy, man.
Retirement thing.
Yes, you hold the belt, the WBC, and you are the lineal champion. I want my number to go up if I'm Tyson Fury, mm-hmm. right? So Tyson Fury is going to get a very large number to fight Usyk, whether that's over across the pond or if that's in Las Vegas or if it's in Saudi Arabia, right? He's going to get a very large number, probably one of the larger, if not the largest, guaranteed purses for a heavyweight championship fight. It's just a matter of where the fight will be and where and when, but I absolutely know it won't be against Anthony Joshua because he brings absolutely nothing at this point except the name.
Yeah, I'm saying it's definitely a fight in terms of marketability. Like, I feel like you can sell it. You know what I mean? Like, and there's still the unknown.
I don't think you can sell that fight.
Oh, man, well, you can sell it.
You can't sell that fight. Listen, my friend, I got a cousin in
London. Joshua big, bro. I don't think you... he's super big.
I get it that he's popular. No, I get it. I know he's a very popular athlete over in London. Yeah. But the general... And I think... I'm not going to say London is even more crazed for boxing than the U.S. But I'll say this. When those fans turn out, they turn out in large numbers. Especially if it's a big... arena.
Yeah.
The boxing public over there knows that this fight would be a sham because I'm trying to tell you, Anthony Joshua, the way that he looked against a guy that was like three inches shorter than him and like 30 to 40 pounds smaller than him. Just think about against Tyson Fury, a guy who's probably like 3 or 4 inches taller than him and probably 50 pounds heavier than him. Tyson Fury will wipe the floor with Anthony Joshua, and it'll be a total sham.
So we agree that styles make fights.
Yes, we agree that styles make fights.
I just feel like, again, I said this before. Usyk just wasn't a good match for him. I just know his style and
Usyk's style is the same style, a similar style to Tyson Fury.
Way more faster. Footwork is way better. He's easy. He's not an easier target to hit than Fury.
His footwork is not better.
Just because he's quick. I say his footwork is better. He's fast.
He's quicker.
It's going to be they're small and he's a smaller target. So a smaller target is easier to hit or harder to hit.
What?
A smaller target is harder to hit. If you move quick and you're a smaller target.
I get it.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, by watching Usyk, I knew that was going to be a problem. And just in that alone. I'm not saying that he's going to be.
I don't necessarily believe that that was the case. Fine, because if I go through my text, you did predict that Anthony.
No, I didn't. Actually, Ray, go back to it. Ray, no, I talk. Go through the text. What did I say? What did I say? I'll tell you verbatim. It's on there, and you can go back, and you'll be wrong. Because I clout this, and everybody on Twitter knows you'll be wrong. I said that this is what I said. You talking about fight two or fight one?
Fight one.
Fight one. This is what I said, fight one. Listen to the show. You can go back and rewind it. I said that Joshua would win the fight. He can only win the fight by knockout. This is my prediction. Can only win the fight by knockout. Usyk would win all rounds. If it goes the distance, Usyk wins.
Okay.
That's been my prediction. Been very consistent with it because everybody knows how much I like Usyk.
I'll go look.
Everybody knows how I love Usyk. Usyk is a dog. Period. I said this on the beginning. I told Ray, if he was here, he would let you know too. But what I said, I told Ray, I was like, I don't even want him taking this fight. I said Usyk can beat him. I said that Usyk could beat Joshua. You know what I'm saying? I said this. So I'm just saying Usyk. Against Fury, though, I think Fury is a better matchup for Joshua. I think Fury is a better matchup for Joshua. Does that mean that Joshua can beat Fury? No, I said he's a better matchup for Joshua. Usyk is not a better matchup for Joshua at all. Because the footwork is real, and he has funky angles. He's a smaller Lomachenko. I mean, he's a bigger Lomachenko.
Okay.
The way he fights is a bigger Lomachenko. So it just wasn't, to me, wasn't a good fight. But here we go. Not for me. This is a tweet. I'm reading this. I mean, it's an Instagram post to my man. Here we go about the fight. My man Damien on Facebook posted about this fight. He said, "It's crazy that I don't hear a lot of criticism for Fury challenging a dude who is coming off of back-to-back losses. When Floyd Mayweather used to get criticized all the time for fighting dudes too late, when none of his big name opponents were coming off of L's." Well, let's see.
What?
About, you just read, you heard it? Let me read it back to you.
Okay.
All right. This is my man.
Oh, no, I heard the comment. Right, yeah, no, it's fair, right? It's fair. Mm-hmm. Tyson Fury has put himself in a position where if we just realistically look at the landscape of heavyweight boxing, right? Yeah. There's only one fight that really legitimately makes sense for him, and that's a fight against Usyk. Now, whether he decides to price himself out or he decides to go through with all of these shenanigans in social media or in the public, that's up to him. Or maybe he really doesn't want the fight. You know, I don't know why he wouldn't want the fight, but, you know, to be the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, which is very rare in the history of boxing,
facts.
I don't know why you wouldn't take that fight. But I think these are all semantics and, you know, Tyson Fury necessarily won't get criticized because, you know why? Because he boxes on the platform which we consider elite sports journalism, and that's ESPN, and no one on ESPN will criticize him.
Good point.
Because he's a top ranked fighter.
That. Yeah.
He's a top ranked fighter. So he won't get criticized for it. Right? Well, no, I won't say he won't get criticized for it. I think there's one guy, Andre Ward.
Yeah,
Andre Ward would, you know, he's definitely a guy who cuts through the BS and just calls it as it is.
He does, bro. He does. I actually like Jared Anderson, though. That's the dude I like.
Yeah, but I like Jared Anderson, too, man. But not right now. I think he still needs... He still needs to go through those experiences in the ring where he overcome some adversity.
He needs to get in deep water.
Yeah.
He needs to get in deep water.
To use that cliche, I think that's the correct boxing cliche to use.
He needs to be dragged into deep water. But yeah, man, I want to see. I do like Jared Anderson. I think he's the next one. I like his skill. I love his skill. Like, he's actually a skilled heavyweight. He's just not a guy throwing punches. But back to Tyson Fury, though. Yeah, I think it's fair. Mayweather, it's fair. Mayweather, everybody talks about Mayweather has hand-picked opponents, but at least they have momentum.
Look, that's the thing. People, I always hate it when people use that hand-picks opponents.
Yeah.
Look, no, every elite fighter hand-picks opponents. True. Oscar De La Hoya, hand-picked
fighters. Didn't he, though?
Right? Manny Pacquiao, hand-picked fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, so every elite fighter, the top fighters in boxing get to handpick whoever they want to fight, mm-hmm. right? Now, it's up for us as consumers of those fights to either pay for them on pay-per-view mm-hmm. or decide we don't want to watch it or to attend or not to attend, sure. right? Yeah. But soon, you know, if your criticism against Tyson Fury is that, you know, he wants to pick someone like Anthony Joshua to face, all right, that's fine. You don't have to support the fight.
Yeah, you don't. That's all. You don't have to.
No.
It's true, yeah. You don't have to. So, I mean, I'm hopefully he fights Usyk. I'm not going to lie to you. I believe in fairness. But did you watch the – I didn't watch it. But I saw it.
I did not.
Ruiz
did
versus
not.
King Carl Ortiz?
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of thrown off because it came on Sunday night.
Me too. It was
I'm not going to say – I actually like the idea of a Sunday night fight on a long weekend.
Yeah,
on a long weekend, especially when there's no football, there's no basketball.
Yeah.
Cause
you got college football, but
if
you're a boxing fan, you're going, it is.
But even
is.
Then, like college baseball on Sundays and Mondays. College football on Sundays and Mondays. It just doesn't feel the same.
It just depends on the matchup. It's not really the same. You're right.
No. Although that Florida State and
I missed that game.
And LSU though. Game was
amazing. I heard
it was
amazing. I missed that game. But yeah, I mean, Ruiz winning, beating King Kong. I like King Kong Ortiz. But at least Luis has shown folks that he does have skill. People look at the presentation.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about presentation. Yeah. It is, but, you know, I think obviously that next fight for Ruiz is going to be against Deontay Wilder.
If he wins his next fight, right?
Who?
Deontay.
No.
Who's he fighting his next? Who is he fighting? He's fighting somebody, right?
Has it been announced?
I think it has been announced. I thought he's fighting. I got to look it up. I swore he's fighting some. Let me look it up now. I swore.
Yeah, I could be wrong. I don't claim to know everything.
Nah, I think he is fighting somebody. Next fight. I'm trying to look it down. Next fight, Deontay. It is.
Who is I think from what I
October,
hear.
October,
Yeah.
He's fighting October 15th.
Okay, yeah. So
Robert
Helenius. That's right. That's You're mm-hmm, correct. Mm-hmm. So from what I heard was Deontay Wilder came into the ring after the fight.
He did.
So obviously they're both PBC boxers. So that would be the fight that, you know, I guess I don't want to call it major fight, but, you know, it is. It's a fight between two guys who held championship belts. Two PBC guys. And this will be the fight that gets one of them back into contention.
It makes sense.
For another shot at the championship.
It makes sense.
You know, just looking, I mean, Deontay Wilder has to get past this fight that you said is scheduled for October 15th. But if he does, you know, people are going to look at Andy Ruiz and say, oh, Deontay Wilder's going to beat him easily, which I don't necessarily think will be the case.
I think it's different. I think it comes to, like, this is how it goes for Deontay. I think when you fight the guy with skill, right, it is what it is. Because Ruiz has hand speed. You know, he has hand speed for heavyweight. It's either Deontay, if you can get caught by Deontay, it is what it is. Like, that's when you go, that's what it is. But you do have an opportunity to beat Deontay if you don't get caught.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, but it does seem that, you know, Deontay can get one. And like, how can you still stand after that one? You know what I mean? Like, that's what it is. Can you still stand it? You'll go down. Can you still gather yourself after the one?
Also, Deontay Wilder's chances of winning are greatly enhanced if he boxes in the first, like he did in the first couple of rounds against Tyson Fury.
Yes, you're talking about his last fight.
Yeah.
But then he kind of went away.
Yeah, he faded. He faded down the end. But if from a physical standpoint and a cardiovascular standpoint, if he's still, you know, in that great physical condition and cardiovascular, if that matches up, then, you know, it'll definitely, he has the opportunity to.
I agree.
Go the distance against Andy Ruiz.
And I will add that he may even be better suited for this fight. He may not have to put on the extra weight.
Like no, he won't have to put on the extra weight. He has the size advantage.
So he don't have to do what he tried to do with Fury. Like he can just go in, you know, his normal weight, and that will help his cardiovascular, you know, situation in that fight. So I think I think it's definitely winnable for Deontay. I just think that this, like you said, depending on what Deontay you get going into that fight, his mindset in terms of, does he feel like he could just knock him out, or does he feel like,
or is he coming to box?
you know, if he comes to box, I think he'll be in good shape.
Yep.
So hopefully he does, man. Like I don't wish ill on any boxer, and I think Deontay does have that knockout ability. Only my friends make me like hate on Deontay.
Why would your friends make you hate on him?
Because man, like it's just because this dude named Anthony Joshua is Nigerian, and we had this feud about who's better, and they like the American, and he's cool. He's an American dude. I like him too. I'm like American too. And
you're like America? I was about to say, come on, brother. Stop the lies. Stop the lies. You are American.
I'm American, but I root for my Nigerian brothers. It is what it is. I just do. You know what I'm saying?
It's nothing wrong with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And then so we have this like this war. You know what I'm saying? This wild war that I don't know where it comes from. You know?
I don't know either.
I was like, Joshua, when Joshua got beat by Fury, right? Because their folks were kind of boosted. These folks I grew up with, they were kind of boosted. And I was like, we fought him. They're like, oh, he gonna beat Fury. I was like, all right, you know. And this, I won't even hold you, dog. The first fight, I thought Wilder was gonna beat Fury. Fight one, I thought he was gonna beat him. Like before, I was like, yeah, he gonna knock him out. So you know what I mean. So after watching, I was like, yo, like Fury's just better than this dude. Like boxing, even though he got the knockdown, that little Undertaker thing, what he did, I was like, yo, Fury's just flat out better. Then I told him, I was like, yeah, he ain't never going to be Fury, dude. Like, the skill is—he's just too—he's just way more skilled than him.
Yeah.
So folks were like, oh, whatever, because they were saying that he can beat. So I was geeked. I was like, yeah, I told y'all he can't beat Joshua. Like he lost to Fury, he can't beat Joshua. So as soon as like Joshua loses to Ruiz, I get the hate. So we got this little war back and forth. You know what I'm saying? Okay. It's all good though, man.
I mean, whatever works for you, my friend.
Yeah, so yeah.
But all right, as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with UMES women's basketball coach Fred Batchelor after the break.
That's not to the urban spot saying.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
.com.
They just praying that I crash. But those guys, they don't want to see you last. That Jacob $3 million above your tax. A tub full of money, I still can't relax. Time spinning, Lord forgive me, I'm a sinner. Conquer divide niggas. Wrong side of the petition, only divine winning. Better listen when I tell you how I put time in it. Please forgive me, God did. So leave me in the dark, swimming with the sharks. Dope boy, big calm, still the biggest boss. Got a kilo on the place.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Bole and Will T. Ray Jeezy is out, and we are part of Empire Media at amppiremedia.com. All right, I want to thank you all for tuning into the show. We appreciate you all, man. The love and support. You the real ones. Hey, before we sign off, listen to our HBCU Corner interview with the University of Maryland Eastern Shore women's basketball coach, Fred Batchelor. Hawk pride in the building. You know I'm an alum. So I like to wrap the show. Hey, thanks and enjoy the interview. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole and Ray, and we are part of Empire Media at amppiremedia.com. It's time for HBCU Corner. Our guest is the current coach of the University of Maryland Eastern Shores women's basketball team. He's the winningest coach in UMES women's basketball history. We bring to you Coach Fred Batchelor. Coach Batchelor, welcome to HBCU Corner with the Urban Sports Scene.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Absolutely, Coach.
Yeah, absolutely. We just great
had
to
a,
have
oh,
you.
Go ahead. Go ahead. My bad. Am I jumping too fast?
No, you were right. You may jump in, Ray. You may jump
right.
in.
Coach, it's good to have you. Like I said, we just had a brief discussion. You know, we were both UMES alums, and around the time you got there is around the time I left. Wole was still there finishing up. But we had Coach Crafton on, and he had no idea what the Hawk's Nest was, the restaurant. Do you remember that restaurant, the Hawk's Nest, that was
man,
on campus?
Do I? I gained like 20 pounds when I first came to school. the food was good. It was cheap, and they just gave me so much.
I missed.
There's nothing. It was nothing like the Hawk's Nest. And everybody.
So what happened to it?
Man, when they changed over and went with a different hospitality department. Uh-huh. That was in-house
mm.
cooking and all that. When they went outside and outsourced the cafeteria and all that, it took that business away. So that hurt the whole community, because I don't know if y'all remember. I mean, it used to be lines upstairs of people waiting to get the food.
Yeah.
on Thursdays, particularly on Soul Food Thursdays.
Soul Food Thursdays.
And Seafood Friday, and then on Wednesdays, we had Caribbean Wednesdays, or Tuesday. Yeah,
so we missed that. And when we had Commissioner Sonya Steeles on, she even talked about the same stuff.
Soul Food Tuesday, she talked about.
Fridays, Soul Food Thursdays. Soul Food Thursdays was there back when I was in school, and the turkey wings was all the chain mac and cheese. My wife is also an alum, so she used to stay hitting up Soul Food Thursday. So I was glad to see that tradition is still kind of there. I saw Coach Crafton posted Soul Food Thursday. The DJ was in the calf. It looked like it's still fun.
Yeah, it's still good. It's probably good one day a week, Thursday, Soul Food Thursdays. Outside of that, we miss the Hawk Nest Monday through every other day.
They're the best honey mustard, man. The best honey mustard in town.
I used to think they had the best French dressing. We don't have the same French dressing anymore.
Oh, that joint was banging.
Yeah, you're right.
Whew. Old school French, not this new French. The old school.
It was darker too.
The memories, right? The memories, man.
Yeah, great place to be.
I used to get. I know. I used to get the cheeseburger sub. I gave a lot of weight to Houston Shore. So, hey, Coach, I had a question too. You know, they've been playing around with like homecoming. When is homecoming this year?
November 12th.
Okay.
I think the first year we did it was last year, and I think they wanted to see how it was received, and so it was a long time before they told us. But I think we're gonna be a fall homecoming from here on out. So November 12th, we are at home against Washington College, and I believe our men are. I'm not sure exactly who they're playing.
Okay, I used to love watching the women's basketball games for homecoming. It was fun. Actually, at the time, I thought it was way more fun than watching the dudes play.
We've been very fortunate at homecoming to have a lot of success at homecoming. In the schedule, when we used to be in league play, you know, it was all based on the schedule. So you weren't able to pick the team you wanted to play. But we've always been fortunate. Our kids always show up and play really, really well on homecoming. They've done that consistently.
Yeah, that was a theme. I felt like even we were there, like the women definitely showed out in homecoming. You could tell that they were ready for that moment.
Yeah. And I think it's because it's an opportunity with young women. When they see an opportunity like that, it's an opportunity for them to really kind of show people what they're capable of doing. Uh-huh. And I think they take it a little bit more serious. I think it means a little bit more to them because they don't get we don't get the crowd on normally like we get at home. I mean, even though we do draw well on the shore. Like we 1,000. We usually get 1,000 for women's basketball game, which is really, really good. We're usually in the top 25 in the country in attendance. Awesome. But when we get in 2,000, 4,000 for homecoming, my young ladies really, really relish that. They think they appreciate it, and they usually come out and represent the school really well.
And then the alumni shows out for them games too, right? They come out a lot, right?
Yeah. Right, especially on the road. Like when we're on the road, we get some alumni, and then we get some locals that come here. But you know, really, it's still a short. The only thing that's probably been built since y'all been gone is a Dunkin' Donuts at the front of the school. So it ain't a whole lot to do come game time. So we benefit from kids supporting the games.
Great. All right, so Coach, let's go right into the season. So what is your outlook in terms of this? You know, the upcoming season, and how is recruiting for you?
Well, it's interesting because, like, this is probably, you know, we come out of COVID. We didn't play the year before last.
Uh-huh.
And we returned every kid. We returned all 15 kids that played on the previous team when COVID hit. This year, I have six new players. We have six new players, four freshmen, a four-year transfer, and a junior college transfer. So six kids, that's a lot. That's probably the most we've had in an incoming group of kids. Me to say, I really don't know a whole lot about this team just yet. However, we do return about four or five, six kids that started last year too. So we return a good group of kids that I'm familiar with, but it's going to be a new identity. I think, you know, coming out of COVID and getting that year out, and a new identity. I think we're establishing ourselves almost. We looked at this year more of not like it was more like a reset. You know, coming out of COVID, coming out of last year, we wanted to reset. We wanted to look at what we were doing and kind of reevaluate things and really get ready to take off and do more than what we've done in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Coach, as you know, it's an exciting time for HBCU basketball, not just the MEAC, of course, the SWAC, the CIAA, you name it. And I'm hoping at least that helps with recruiting. But it, of course, is vital to have experienced players that you just mentioned. Who's some players you can kind of highlight that you're looking forward to leading this team coming into this 2022 season?
Well, you're right about the excitement of HBCU. We get more phone calls now than we ever had before. We're getting kids that we probably would not have gotten. You know, white man's ice is always colder. You know? And one of your alum taught me that, Cedric Jenkins, who I don't know if he
Big Sid. Big Sid, yeah, Cash Money. Yeah. I know Big Sid. That's what
he came back to school. I don't know if he came back to school in later on because he didn't finish. He came back and got his degree and worked with us. Was a volunteer.
Oh, cool, man. Manager, that's cool.
Then he worked his way up to be a full time coach. Now he called me the other day. He's the director. He's working on his doctorate degree here.
Oh,
and
wow.
He's the director of the Urban Economic Center of DC.
Oh, so man, he's
been a great success. And this is a guy that came in and volunteered to wash clothes first as an older, non-traditional student.
Wow.
I'm amazed with Jenkins. Jenkins is a great guy. But he used to always tell me that. And I think until these things started happening to George Floyd and this, a new sense of awareness and recognition of who we are and where we fit in this country, I think it really motivated and has motivated people to look beyond what the traditional going to what people, you know, we're the only group of people that send our kids to outside of our community to be educated. And this is a great opportunity being at HBCU for kids to kind of regrasp that experience.
Awesome. So
to answer your question, I'm excited about the kids we have coming in. We have two freshmen last year. One was Ariana Sewell. She was a freshman out of New York, true freshman. She made the all-rookie team and was third team all-conference. She was leading us in scoring and rebounding as a freshman. She returns after she got hurt. She didn't play in the tournament game because she got hurt the last game of the year. And then we have another, she was her first year playing. She's a sophomore. Zamira Haynes, very exciting, very talented, young North Philly kid. Can really get it. She can really play. She struggled in adjustments her freshman year, just learning and understanding how to play at the collegiate level. But tournament time, I think she had 25 in her opening game and helped us advance to the semifinals and made the MEAC All Tournament team. So those two kids, along with a few others, I'm expecting big things from.
So, Coach, you got to the semis last year in the MEAC tournament. So now, what's the overall goal? Like, what's the goal for this group?
It's championship or bust. I mean, at this point, you know, we talk about the fact that, you know, we've been winning championships in so many different ways than cutting down nets. You know, in the 18 years I've been here, we've been to the conference championship game in the past. We as a ninth seed, we were on our way to the championship game when COVID hit, knocked us out after we knocked off the number one seed. We play our best basketball come tournament time. But in light of the fact that we have not cut down the nets, we have had so many success stories and championships in my time here and being fortunate to lead this program. You know, we've graduated 65 student athletes in 18 years. And of that, like nine with master's degrees. Our kids, I sat in the summer and had Erica Bennett, who she may have been here when y'all were in school. Because when I came, she was a senior, but she was only here 1 year. Erica Bennett, who's a Norfolk police officer. We had her come in and tell her story and talk to the young ladies. And her and I, when she played, we didn't cut down the nets, but I'm sitting there looking at nothing but a championship person. So we've been fortunate that we've been able to build a championship program. And the only thing left to do is cut down the nets. So we want to make sure we give this community that experience.
I know, Ray, now we want to drive down to that championship game. I want to be there, man. I want to be there.
I know you've been on the cusp. It's so close. And then COVID, man, that just, I mean, but everybody had to deal with this. I guess we can't be, but so mad. And real quick, I want to ask you, this is my last question. I know we talked a bit about HBCU basketball and also just recruiting. Can you expound a bit more? One thing I regret, and I've said this in the past, is I regret not taking just full advantage of soaking up that experience of how historical that area is, the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And I'm wondering how that factors into your recruiting pitch and just your overall message to these young folks, knowing their history. And also just what does it mean overall just to be coaching at a historically Black college?
It's funny because I was coming back. We rescheduled today and I was coming back. I had to take one of my kids to a doctor's appointment. And it was two things about that. One is, and I was thinking, she's not even playing anymore. She's finishing up school. She got hurt last year. We just need a follow-up appointment. And the fact that she called me to take her to the doctor. I think sometimes in our HBCU's experience, because I only have two full-time staff people. One has a baby. She had to go pick him up for daycare. And the other one was working a kid out on the court. I don't know how many other Division I coaches, and I thought about this, have the opportunity to serve at the level that we do because we don't have the resources and we don't have the extra people. So as a head coach, it forces me to be involved much, much more with our players and kids at a much deeper level than if I had 6-7 full-time staff. I would never be taking them to the doctor. I think somebody else would take them. But it forces me to interact with them. And I think if the opportunity to serve, our ability to serve in a different capacity than any other Division I programs in the country is special and unique. And I think it's a benefit to serve as much as it is to receive, but so much to serve. And I'm riding through and I'm coming by today as we're coming back. And we ride by the police station. Y'all remember the police station?
That's like, of course.
Of course we do.
And I started to tell the story to the young lady about how back in the day in Jim Crow, they went up and got a man out of that building and hung him on a tree in Prince's Inn. So the history is kind of it can hurt a little bit.
Yeah,
but this history, as you read Frederick Douglass and you read some of the stuff, you'll see common areas come up over and over again because this is a big area for the slave trade and for transitioning through there. So it is a great opportunity to talk about the history of it. And the nice thing about it is it still looks the same as it did when y'all were here, which is unique of almost any other place in the country.
Yeah.
So yeah,
beautiful campus. One of the most beautiful campuses in the country, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is, and it's a wonderful, to answer your question, a wonderful opportunity, experience to not just coach basketball, but to do it at an HBCU. It's been great for me.
Awesome. I actually want to add this too, as well, because you know, Ray and I, we are located in the DMV. So I want to know, how's recruiting? How's your DMV recruiting?
We picked up a kid out of Annapolis. Her grandfather was actually an alum.
Okay.
Big kid, freshman, went to St. Francis High School in Baltimore.
Okay.
Another wing out of another guard out of St. Francis. So those two, I'm trying to think. With a kid I just talked about, she was a DMV kid.
Okay.
We really try to get the area. We want to recruit regionally. So we have a few kids from North Carolina. We have one kid from New York. Two kids, another kid from D.C.
Okay.
Grady, played at Eastern High School.
Okay.
Yeah. No. And she's I would tease her all the time about being a DCite. And we talk about that because she walk around here. You know how DC people do. She walk around here like she own the place.
Yeah. Listen to
go go. Yeah. Listen to go go. Just bullying the people around. You know? And we try to get as many kids as we can from that area. We were fortunate to get a few.
Of course.
Uh oh. Sound like we got a reputation there.
I know, right? You know it.
Still, we gotta work on that. We gotta bring everybody together.
I know. Hey, I want to say, Eleanor Roosevelt High School, our girls basketball team is really dope. Eleanor Roosevelt High School, our girls basketball team is dope. So you need a few girls. Let me know.
Who's coaching at Eleanor now?
I forgot the female basketball.
We actually have a kid from Eleanor Roosevelt too.
We do? Their program is really good. Because I coached Greenville. I mean, I used to coach for Greenbelt basketball, for boys and girls, and a lot of girls that have come up have went to that high school and played really well. They're really good. Like a lot of them.
Yeah, y'all have good kids. And Michaela Adams, we're expecting big things from Michaela. She tore her ACL last year.
She played
there. So we're looking forward to her coming in.
Okay.
And making a big impact.
If you need a pipeline, I know people. So just letting you know, I do know people.
we'll continue to stay in touch after this call.
All right, definitely. Well, Coach, this has been amazing. Is there anything that you would like to add? You want to share? The platform is yours.
Being a man coaching women's sports is another component to this that is always challenging. I've been fortunate that we've been able to bring in staff. We're going to be bringing in a new staff person this year. My former staff, my other assistant coach, is an alum that played for me here. And then another alum, the other assistant coach is an alum from Coppin who played there. And before last year, my graduate assistant was an alum. So we had all MEAC alums on our bench, whether it be from UMES or Coppin. But I'm really, really thankful and fortunate to have the staff that we have. And with Casey Morton being the only consistent female ex-player. She plays a huge role in helping our young ladies understand their role as young women on a college campus at this time in their development. So I just really want to always take the opportunity to highlight the work that she's doing, and Cedric Jenkins, my other staff with a short staff, the impact that they're having on serving these young people. So I'm really appreciative to them.
That's awesome. Hey, Coach, man, thanks for being on. We appreciate having you on HBCU Corner. We do appreciate
it. Yeah, come back with us.
My pleasure. Just let me know. I'll be looking forward to it.
All right, definitely.
Sounds good.
All right. Yep. Y'all take care.
Take care.
Take it easy.